You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleNomics. I'm Brandon Thurston, joined with Jesse Collings, and a special guest today that we have, stock analyst, media analyst from Lightshed, and a partner at Lightshed. And I think he is a major social media influencer in the wrestling space after tweeting the photo of Paul Levesque on the ramp last week, Monday. We are very happy to have Brandon Ross with us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah.
Fans of both of you as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brandon.
Yeah, I made Jesse listen to some Lightshed podcasts in preparation for today, so he should be well prepared.
Forced me to. No.
So you know my weaknesses then.
No, but just for the people at home who maybe aren't familiar with your work, Brandon, can you just kind of describe briefly the kind of what you do at Lightshed and kind of what your kind of position is?
Okay, so there's two businesses under the Lightshed umbrella. One of them is an equity research business, which is essentially picking stocks for institutional investors or helping them to come to the conclusions on their own investments. And institutional investors could be anyone from hedge funds to mutual funds to private equity shops to other VCs. And the reason that I use other is because we also have a venture capital fund under our umbrella that invests in smaller companies. They're in the seed A and some B round all across the tech, media, and telco space. And personally, I specialize in a whole bunch of things under the TMT umbrella. One of them is live events. Another is sports, which I think syncs very well into what you guys are really interested in. I do things like video games, a whole bunch of digital media stuff. And then I work very closely with my two partners that cover other areas of the ecosystem. And I'm pretty dialed in on all that stuff too, including large cap media, traditional media, you know, digital media, a little bit of telco stuff, but Walt Pisick, my partner, is the one who's really much more focused on that area.
Yeah. And kind of the reason you're on this show and the reason I think maybe some of our listeners would have heard of you before is because you're pretty active in talking about wrestling and WWE, and obviously that fits perfectly into kind of the portfolio described as sports, live entertainment, all of, you know, media rights, all of that stuff kind of coming together for WWE. And in fact, it's funny, when the news broke about Vince McMahon a few weeks ago, I think it was a week from last Friday, the news came out that he had stepped down as CEO and of a chair of board of the directors. And when that first happened, I was like, well, this doesn't mean he's going to give up creative. He might be just stepping away from the position that he already kind of temporarily stepped down from. But then I saw your tweet, which is like, Vince McMahon is no longer part of creative. And I was like, oh, well, it's legit. If Brandon is saying that, then
well, that was the game changer, right? The fact that he was stepping away, not just from management, but over that tight creative control that he's had over the business since the beginning of time. And I know you guys, I read, you know, very closely what you guys have said about that. And the light bulb really went off and compelled me to tweet when I found out that was going to change.
Yeah, there's a lot of optimism, I would say, from at least, you know, the audiences that we interact with a lot. There are people going through Raw and going through SummerSlam, which are the two shows that were really, I know SmackDown was on Friday, but especially SummerSlam and Raw were especially under the supervision of Paul Levesque as head of creative. And people are just going through it with a fine tooth comb to see if there's any differences that they can detect. And I have watched both SummerSlam and Raw last night, because we're recording here on Tuesday, and they did feel somewhat different to me. I feel like Paul is probably incentivized to not change things too much too quickly and get people worried that things are going to be different. But they do feel somewhat different so far.
What were some of the differences that you picked up as, even as a fan, forget about as the person who runs WrestleNomics?
Well, definitely on SummerSlam, they brought out, after the Becky Lynch and Bianca Belair match, they brought out Bayley, who was returning, but they also brought out Io Shirai, and who is now renamed Io Sky, and brought back Dakota Kai, who last we knew her contract had expired. It appeared that, you know, Vince didn't have a lot of interest in using Io Shirai or Dakota Kai, but those are two wrestlers that Triple H probably thinks highly of, and they wouldn't have been there if not for the change in creative. That's one thing. Anything else come to mind for you, Jesse?
I think that there was more on Raw than there was on SummerSlam. I think the women coming out, obviously, like Dakota Kai and Io Shirai being NXT people, kind of translates to being Paul Levesque's people.
Of course.
And yeah. So
Ciampa getting a big push last night too.
Well, on SummerSlam, like, to me, the women coming out almost felt kind of lazy, because they didn't really have any real creative plans for them. They just kind of came out and stared at people. They didn't get physical or anything. And it kind of felt like, okay, we need to send a symbolic message that Triple H is in charge, and so this is what we're going to do, which is actually important, because I didn't feel like that took place on Raw the previous Monday, the Madison Square Garden Raw. I felt like that was basically business as usual when a lot of people were tuning in and looking for that kind of symbolic change. I think that change over the long term is going to be gradual.
Though, right? Too fast for that Raw. I mean,
but you could have done something. I was of the belief that you should, I don't care, like, if you don't want to do anything because you got SummerSlam coming up. I was saying there are going to be way more people tuning in looking for something different tonight. It's way more critical for your business to show them that something is different than it is to, like, commit to storylines that you already had. I mean, it's a company that rips up storylines all the time anyway. So would it really matter if you maybe changed moved a title around or something like that? But on Raw, you could tell there was a little more focus. They did the more focus on the mid card. There was more focus on the women's division. There was more focus on, like, they did the whole video package for the United States Championship.
Yeah.
And
I thought that was remarkable. Yeah.
Rehabilitating the mid-card titles, the United States Championship and the Intercontinental Championship, I think are something that, knowing what we know about Paul Levesque, is probably something that he would be high on. And Vince McMahon obviously kind of had disregard for it. So I think that was kind of a sign.
And I was asking in the one group chat that we were a part of, there were no backstage skits where they don't acknowledge the camera. Everything that happened backstage was an interview with an announcer and a wrestler, which is not normal for W programming. So
starting with some incremental change, but...
Yeah, I would say so, and I expect that just politically, and maybe for the financial community too, it's in his interest to not change too much too quickly, or to not make any tense relationships more tense, or to not create headlines that say, oh my God, WWE is totally different than it was before, and create any sort of nervousness or uncertainty, but also doing some things to signal, hey, things are going to change here.
I think from the financial community perspective, honestly, the analysts and investors don't really care that much about the creative, mostly because they're not really fans that are going to notice those changes in creative like you guys would. I think it's much more about kind of these big picture existential questions surrounding WWE that's really got the eyes of investors.
Yeah. And the creative aspect is something that I always...
That's why I'm so interested in it, because no one's focused on it.
Yeah, and I always weigh, like, am I overemphasizing that? And you'll get people on the opposite end to say, the creative doesn't matter, and all the money's guaranteed, and TV rights fees are going to escalate over time. So what does it matter?
That's not true, because the creative ultimately drives the audience. And if you look at the history of the media business, with audience comes dollars, and that's it. So the reason people have been focused on it, even if they couldn't analyze necessarily the quality of the content, is because they're sitting and reading what real wrestling fans have to say, and they've been looking at these ratings that have been really sagging, compounding downward since the last Raw and SmackDown licensing deals were done. And they're like, why the fuck is this happening? I understand that there's declines in the multi-channel video universe, but this seems worse than it should be, especially when you look at sports and live entertainment, and they're much more modest declines relative to the larger multi-channel bundle.
Yeah,
I have kind of a question, Brandon, and sure. I don't know if you can answer this, but I've thought about it a lot. When you talk about kind of the year-over-year decline in cable homes, right? And you can look at a number and say, well, the Raw viewership is down X amount this year from last year. But, you know, 7% of homes have – there's or cable subscriptions are down 7%. So obviously Raw is going to be down if less people have it in homes. But at the same time, one of the reasons that WWE is getting these very lucrative television deals is because these cable companies are banking on – their product being appealing enough to people that they will continue to pay for cable because they want to watch Monday Night Raw. People who are really into wrestling are much more likely to be cable subscribers because that is the primary method for watching.
Or sports in general. If you want right. to, if you want to group WWE,
yeah, you can
sports.
You can expand it to exactly. to any major investment live that a cable company
yeah,
is
live
making.
Event.
So, is there pressure on WWE to? I guess you can't – to me, it's like you can't really use the year-over-year decline as like an excuse or an explanation for it because ultimately WWE is being paid all this money to make sure that there isn't a decline because the concept that their event is DVR-proof and that it's a live event that you need to pay to watch, and it's what's going to keep cable television afloat. Do you think there's extra pressure on WWE or the NFL or the NBA to kind of deliver ratings despite the fact that the trend is headed downwards?
No, absolutely. And I think that if you look at the businesses, the one business with the most control over the content is the one that's scripted, right? So that's kind of what makes WWE unique, is the power of the writers, whereas in every other, quote, sport, everything is kind of, yeah, look, you can change the rules. Like Major League Baseball has had to, you know, start tweaking the rules because of lack of interest in the game. But you can't control what the drama looks like on the other side. In WWE, you can by writing the creative. And so that's why I think it's, you know, a little more pressure in that regard on the wrestling business.
And Stephanie McMahon would agree in the sense that there was a Variety article Brandon, from a few months ago where Stephanie McMahon said that we're like sports but better because we can script the Hail Mary
pass. Which
Brandon
are you talking to?
Either one, if you guys remember, but I'm pretty sure I think it was a Variety article, but she said we can script the Hail Marys.
Did you write an article about that?
I did write an article.
Adweek, maybe?
Yeah, I forget. Maybe it wasn't Variety, but it was the concept was that WWE is like sports, but they have that control element in the way that like sports, like the NBA cannot decide which team wins the game. Some people like to think that they do, but the NBA ultimately cannot. The NBA can't decide we're going to put these two teams in the NBA finals or we're going to make sure that this player and that kind of thing. But WWE,
of course, the rub goes both ways because the ultimate element of surprise is the fact that it's not scripted, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
The randomness of sport is what makes it intriguing.
Yeah. And I always feel like wrestling in business sort of manifests itself in a way that it resembles sports. And also in some other ways, it resembles scripted entertainment or sort of lands in between, whether that's in the DVR viewership by percentage. You probably have a very small percentage of people watching shoot sports, if you will, on DVR. But in wrestling, it could be 10%, 20%, something like that. Whereas in scripted, it's probably like 50% or something like that. And I think there's other ways too. But so just a couple weeks ago, so 2 Mondays ago, we woke up and found the 8K for Vince McMahon resigning from WWE. And I didn't see this coming, but that those payments that he made for related to the NDAs the Wall Street Journal has reported about, those expenses apparently need to be counted as company expenses.
Yep.
And W was... I was figuring W was going to report this coming Thursday, which would be August 4th. They're saying maybe they'll report next Tuesday, August... I think that's the 9th.
Yeah.
So they have to go back. Yeah.
Yeah, so they have to go back and restate prior financials and take a charge. Now, that is... It's not something that investors are really caring about because it's a non-cash charge. It's kind of an antiquated rule whereby if the majority voting owner puts up money on behalf of the company, even if it's not a company expense, then that has to flow through the P&L and be counted as additional paid in capital into the business. There's a lot of reasons why that rule came about, I think, in the early 80s that had more to do with companies propping up their financials with the owner or the possibility of the owner, you know, adding cash and buying things to make the financials look better and it becoming sort of a circular situation. So this restatement is much more of a technicality than anything else, which is why you really didn't see much reaction from the financial community about it.
Right. And whatever negative reaction there would be is going to be outweighed by the excitement around the notion that W might sell.
Yes. So that potential sale has been the number one kind of focus of investors really since the allegations against Vince came out. At the very beginning, there's always been this idea that, yeah, look, WWE is a pretty small company. There are a ton of larger entities that are looking for content, just to keep it basic, and especially live content. And so they'd be a very natural acquisition target for a number of companies. The big question on everyone's mind is, does WWE want to sell or not? And if you dial back or peel back on that question, it comes down to, does the McMahon family want to sell or not?
Yeah. And before we get further in that, Business Insider has basically a listicle out today. I think this is today.
Listing
eight companies that might be interested in buying WWE. It's Comcast.
Why don't you read them off? Yep, I'm curious. Yep.
Comcast, Disney, Amazon, Netflix, Apple, Fox, Warner Brothers Discovery, Paramount.
Okay.
So all streamers.
Well, you're missing probably the company.
We're missing your pick. Yeah.
Is the one that may want this business the most and may make the absolute most sense if, you know, financially the deal could be constructed, which is Endeavor. So have a lot of respect for Business Insider. We're subscribers, but I think that there's they should have contacted me before they wrote that listicle.
Well, it seems like they just rattled off anyone that had a prominent streaming service.
Right.
Because that's the implication, was that, like, okay, why would Apple want to buy WWE? What would the purpose of that be? And it'd be like, well, they could take their content and put it on Apple TV, and we know that Apple's willing to make that big investments they've started getting into live sports, and therefore
that's correct. Yeah,
that's what it's going to be. And I think that's right. It was basically every major streamer might want to buy WWE, which there's some logic to it, but again, seems unlikely. No,
there's absolutely logic. I think that the prevailing wisdom is if a streamer did buy it, or a kind of video-based media company, that Comcast would be the most likely buyer because of the existing relationship, not just on Raw and previously before the Fox deal on SmackDown, but across a lot of shoulder content, which you've seen on some of their other networks.
Mm-hmm. And the Peacock deal, too.
Most especially Bravo. And then, of course, the Peacock deal, which is probably the deal that's worked out the best for Comcast/NBCU.
And I wanted to ask about
some of these. Sorry, Jesse. Some of these
Sounds like our podcast. Continue to talk over each other. I feel at home.
do any of these stand out as not making much sense at all to you? Like Apple sticks out to me as I can't see the Apple brand wanting to buy a pro wrestling
brand
company.
So I think you hit on something. I think the leadership of a lot of these companies, and vis-a-vis Apple, that would probably be in the Eddie Q department. It has to be something that they want to take on, that they feel is additive, especially given the fact that they have an unlimited balance sheet and can make whatever decision around content that they want to make. And yeah, I think Apple, you know, starting to actually, quote, run the league and be responsible for all the logistics when this isn't core to their business, as much as they've, you know, done a bunch of amazing scripted content. Also, this idea that Apple has sort of approached this as being the, quote, HBO of the streaming world, even though there is an HBO, they're adding Max and kind of going the other way. But this
but they're doing prestige,
higher brow prestige programming, as you just put it. I don't know that necessarily WWE programming fits with that, although who knows, right? Yeah. They're definitely experimenting. But I think this, given the size of this, this would be more of an experiment that would come with the responsibility of more than an experiment, if you follow.
Yeah. In the mind of a lot of traumatized wrestling fans that we interact with, we have memories of, yes, we have memories of WCW being owned by Turner. And the cycle of executives that went in and out of the leadership of that company, and ultimately that company stopped existing in 2001 for a number of reasons. I guess that would be a fear, at least among, you know, people who talk wrestling, that if a big parent company ended up having to manage WWE, are they going to know how to manage this weird business and know who to trust to put in charge? Maybe some McMahon family coming over for the beginning of that might help, but eventually maybe, you know, Paul and Stephanie aren't leading this company someday. That would be a big concern, at least in wrestling circles.
No, I think that's a brilliant observation. And it's not just Paul and Steph and the absolute top of the leadership. If you look at the people who have been in production, who are sitting in the trucks, you know, week in and week out, they've been together for 20 something years. So you need
Kevin Dunn has been in that company since
Kevin,
the 80s.
I mean, Kevin Dunn is the absolute best example of what you just said, right? Where, I mean, it is to pull off a scripted live show multiple times a week, in addition to all of the, quote, pay-per-views, is not an easy thing. And there's sort of a tight team and tight, you know, friendships or, you know, frenemy situations at times that sit around that, but it all kind of works. And you have somebody who's a media executive that doesn't necessarily know the business that well come in and be like, hey, I think we should cut costs here. And then you start cutting the wrong people, you're in deep trouble. So as much as there has been complaints around the McMahon kind of dynasty that's, you know, ruled over this asset, there are a ton of very positive things, including continuity that has come out of it.
Yeah. So why Endeavor? Why do you think Endeavor is the best fit?
Well, I think this actually syncs with the conversation we were just having. So if you look at the UFC acquisition and how that was handled, they allowed Dana and UFC to kind of run as their own separate entity while leveraging all the infrastructure of Endeavor to help make them better and unlock revenue opportunities. I think a really good example of that is on the sponsorship side. And we all know that WWE has really been under-monetized from a sponsorship perspective for a long time. And also in it, if you look at like where does the profitability of this business come from, it's on those kind of rights deals. And Nick is amazing at that. We all know, right? His history at CAA and the involvement that he's had in the past on this. But Ari Emanuel is certainly no slouch. And the idea of teaming those two up, you basically have a dream team kind of approaching all these negotiations as well.
And so for people to know, so Nick Khan came from CAA, which is a big talent agency. Endeavor is a talent agency.
That's
led
correct.
Led by Ari Emanuel. Like is, or would, yes, would
sorry,
Endeavor,
I forget the audience. Sometimes I just like.
So would Endeavor and CAA be like business competitors? Is there a relationship?
They are, you know? They are business competitors.
But is there a relationship that you know of between Nick and Ari Emanuel already?
There is a relationship between Nick and Endeavor Management. Yes, that goes way back to the beginning of Nick's career as an agent, actually.
And CAA is a private company, because I've tried to look into this.
So yes.
CAA is probably too small to acquire WB.
I don't think that's kind of like where they're looking right now. Endeavor obviously has public currency, and part of the compensation for the deal would be stock. And knowing what the stock is worth, having a public mark on it is kind of generally a big deal. I don't think it's a stupid idea, especially as CAA has recently bulked up. But you also don't get those synergies between UFC on the infrastructure side and WWE that you would get with the existing business sitting there. And frankly, other live entertainment businesses there. Whether it's, you know, they're the professional bull riders. I know that sounds small and insignificant, but you know, there's a web really of live entertainment assets. Minor league baseball teams are adding other things.
So there would be synergies and cost savings in just in the fact that you've already got UFC that they're investing in. So if you brought in WWE, there'd be a lot of overlap.
Cross promotion opportunities also.
Does Dana want to cross promote with WWE, fake wrestling?
I mean, like we know the history, et cetera, but yeah. You know, perhaps it's a new era. And if you know Ari Emanuel well, he is he's an amazing deal maker and amazing at bringing people together in surprising ways. So potentially, if anyone could unlock that, it would be him.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand. And even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
We've talked about before, like NBCU is a logical potential buyer for WWE,
yep.
But raise the same question that you raised is what in their portfolio is similar to running a company like WWE? It'd be kind of uncharted territory for a lot of these prospective buyers to run a professional wrestling company that produces live events, you know, three, yep. Four, sometimes four times a week in different cities around the country. And obviously Endeavor, the logic being obviously that they have already they run a somewhat similar kind of company in the sense of UFC. Are there other companies that maybe we're not thinking about that could emerge the way Endeavor emerged as a UFC purchase, you know, UFC buyer?
I think Brandon T, the other Brandon, had a good point about CAA. And I think that could be considered kind of a dark horse, if you will, a low probability dark horse. But remember about all these companies like NBCU. I mean, they are used to putting on live shows. You're talking about, you know, NFL in the case of NBCU, plenty of college sports, ESPN, obviously. It's the worldwide leader in sports. So, they have a lot going on there. I just don't know, vis-a-vis ESPN, owned by the parent Disney, whether this is an asset that they see as a great fit for their parent company or not. I mean, a lot of things have actually changed at Disney in this kind of in this new era since Bob Iger left the company, and things like sports betting that you'd never think they'd be involved with, they are. So,
and Fox
is going to sit there as a dark horse. Fox is interesting.
Fox has SmackDown. They're paying $205 million a year for it. Are they a realistic buyer, you think, though?
I think the whole Fox thing is interesting because the prevailing wisdom is the Murdochs, as Rupert Murdoch, who's kind of the patriarch to that family, has, I think, entered his 90s and may or may not be thinking about, you know, undoing more of the sort of Fox empire as he did in the sale to Disney of a lot of their assets, maybe a seller or a continued seller from here.
He's 91. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Wow. It's nuts, right?
And he's been teasing selling and considering selling his company for a very long time.
He sold most of it, right?
Yeah, the 20th Century Fox was sold
out. And the thing he's most interested in, you know, kind of going forward, continues to be the news side of the business, which is, you know, mostly represented outside of Fox News in News Corp. So there is the idea that he could take Fox News, put it together with the News Corp assets, continue to let Lachlan, his son, run that and have political influence while getting rid of the rest of the business. And
News Corp is Wall Street Journal, Market Watch. What else?
Dow Jones. Obviously, like Barron's, a whole bunch of international assets, the New York Post.
Yes, of course.
So there's a bunch in there. But the other way they could go with it is to take their current Fox asset and try and rebulk it up with something else. And if they were to do that, then WWE is a digestible enough asset for them to do that.
After they theoretically merge with somebody else.
After who merges?
Fox.
No, even sort of standalone Fox could probably do a deal there. I mean, that is going to be heavily influenced by probably what Eric Shanks thinks, who kind of runs Fox Sports, what he thinks of it and how he's felt about the performance thus far of SmackDown. And
Is SmackDown going to stay on Fox in what would it be?
I don't know.
2024.
I honestly don't know at this point. I think it probably makes sense for Fox to renew that deal because there's I'm going to use the same word twice here, a ton of tonnage that comes from it. You're getting 2 hours a week on Friday nights with, you know, fairly high overall viewership. And that's probably not something that they really want to mess with. Have they been disappointed overall with the ratings? My belief is that they thought they were going to be higher than they turned out to be, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to go and cut bait with something that's kind of a stalwart of their programming and B, programming who they've analyzed crosses over well with a bunch of the other programming throughout the Fox assets.
Yeah. The argument for doing something like keeping SmackDown on Fox, in my view, has always been when you do the math, it comes out to about $4 million per week for SmackDown. And that's 2 hours of content, and it's new content 52 weeks a year.
Predictable, generally.
Compare that to, like, you know, what would you replace it with? What would you replace SmackDown with? I guess something like 2 one-hour programs. And are they going to cost a total of $4 million or less? Probably not. So you have to
risk weight these things also, because the programming has been slightly, you know, disappointing relative to what expectations are, but you know within a band kind of what audience, who and how much it's going to draw, as opposed to taking on something brand new or scripting stuff, licensing, someone else's idea somewhere else, then you have to see if it works and, how long is it going to work for? And it's obviously a much bigger headache.
When you look at ratings, like that's a big part of what I do. I got to do it as soon as we're done with this call. It's going to be 4 o'clock. Yeah. Nielsen's going to come out. And we've, especially since AEW's come around, it's been emphasized that you got to look at the demo, got to look at 18 to 49. Throughout the rest of the media, though, outside of wrestling circles, I see mostly just viewership being focused on. Like, do you look at one or the other or care? Or
used to be 18 to 49 only because that was like the quote demo for advertising. Obviously, that is still kind of the area where, conventionally the most dollars are being spent.
That's what's driving the ad rates.
Yeah. But if you look at the overall business, and yes, mostly ish driving the ad business at this point. But if you kind of look at the overall viewership of television, the average age is crept above that 49 number. Yeah. So
to eliminate
all those people. Yeah. So to eliminate all those people, you kind of got a problem. But this gets to a big issue for WWE, which is how do they start to relate to younger audiences in the longer form and pull them into their longer form programming. And by longer form, I mean not just social clips that don't monetize. Because the bread and butter of monetization at WWE is what? It's these licensing deals and another licensing deal, which is the pay-per-views.
Yeah. I've speculated that maybe we'll see in the next round of US TV rights, maybe something like, a certain number of Raw episodes end up on Peacock Live or something like that, rather than this what we have now, where the only way to watch Raw or SmackDown Live is through a cable or satellite system. Is that something that sounds real?
Yeah, I think there's at least the flexibility to do that is going to be written into the contracts, such that as this shift occurs in the multi-channel world, there is the optionality to move that audience, purely to streaming. Now, if you look at the performance of Peacock, there's only 13 million people who are subscribing to Peacock.
And so, Peacock was flat in the most recent quarter.
That's right, which is absolutely horrible given what they're spending. Sorry to our friends over at NBCU, but it's just not great.
I was going to ask.
From a WWE ownership perspective, do you want to limit your overall audience size to, the pool to just those 13 million? And the answer is probably no, because you want to bring new viewers on and more casual viewers into the programming. So you're going to need flexibility. If anything, I think that maybe NBC itself, the broadcast network, also gets more play in the next deal there. Where even if there is cord cutting, you still have antennas and other things that you and I probably don't think about much. Sorry to cut you off.
I use my antenna.
That's right. I was just going to ask if about Peacock's flat growth in the last quarter. Does that help WWE? Is that a positive for WWE in the sense, or is it a negative for WWE in the sense that Peacock is looking at what happened? And it's like, all right, well, our content we have wasn't able to continue any upward growth in quarter two, but at the same time the content that they do have that is performing well, which it seems like WWE is one of their better performing pieces of content.
Where would they be without WWE?
Correct. Does that strengthen that?
But if you're WWE, you have to turn around and be like, where would I be if we had more than a bucket of 13 million viewers to be exposed to?
And I know Brandon is a believer in this, and I think there's a lot of value to this thought, which is that WWE's ratings, which have been improved over the last several months, and the live attendance, there's been some positive movement on that end, is part of that related to these WWE premium live events being moved onto Peacock, where
just
more
putting them in front of a way bigger audience than they were on before.
Can see them as a
1 million reach, and now it's like 13.
So that's better, right? So you're going from the you have to only be a wrestling fan to subscribe to these pay-per-views to, hey, if you have it for Peacock for EPL or for some scripted programming or whatever reason, you might kind of stumble across this content and like it. And that could lead to positive outcomes, which is why it's in their best interest to have that bucket of viewers be as big as possible.
Yeah.
And if we go back to the Fox deal, the original Fox SmackDown deal, one of the reasons that people were really bullish on the stock price at that point in time was the belief that SmackDown being on Fox was going to be this tremendous opportunity for WWE to expose its product to way more people because it's going to be on network television that more people are just naturally going to come across. And I don't know if that really did that really happened. I feel like, you know, we didn't see a subsequent rise in interest in Raw. We didn't see a subsequent rise in interest in live attendance or WWE network subscribers. So it didn't.
SmackDown did become the most watched of their shows, but I agree with you.
But only by what, 300,000 or 400,000 viewers,
yeah.
Right? So, I mean, you're also black boxing everything, which is like if you only look at like that one thing that was happening at the company, then you know it didn't translate to better everything else. But perhaps there were, you know, other things going on at the company, creative issues, things we've talked about earlier in this conversation that were negatively influencing all of those things as well.
Yeah. Hulu writes, next day writes are coming up soon, expiring at the end of the year, I believe.
Yeah.
I'm guessing it's not going to be renewed by Hulu. I think.
I don't know. Where's Hulu going to be?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, now you've touched on another, you know, big topic in the media industry, which is what does Disney want to do with that asset as they move more general entertainment onto Disney Plus? All the GE stuff or non kind of Disney brand stuff was supposed to just go on Hulu. So do they want to perhaps get rid of Hulu? And if they did, who's the most likely buyer? NBCU. So that kind of brings this whole discussion full circle.
Right. We could see it going to Peacock. I could see Netflix bidding on it. I could see Amazon Prime.
I think Netflix is probably, well, maybe. But next day is not, you know, kind of like what they're thinking in terms of content strategy right now.
There was a story that Netflix had kind of ceased kind of the plans, at least at the time, to produce the Bill Simmons led Vince McMahon documentary. I don't know if it was a documentary series or just one.
It's going to be a 4-part documentary, I believe.
Yeah, so it was going to be kind of like a little mini series on it. And in the wake of the NDAs and the kind of sexual act scandal that ended up happening, Netflix kind of, I guess, said that they were going to see. I don't know if it's going to cease production or they're no longer.
Yeah, they took a big loss on it. Yeah,
right. Do you think that would potentially scare Netflix off of purchasing WWE? It would seem, I know Vince McMahon, I guess, officially isn't associated with the company.
Vince isn't there anymore. My guess is that documentary as produced was missing a big part of the story also.
Yeah.
Right. Such that if you, it would have been a inaccurate picture of the man.
Right. Without, I don't think it's any great loss to people seeking out the truth anywhere. But I did find it interesting that one of their, you know, the people that, you know, Nick Khan brings it up or people bring it up in these media calls and these investor calls that say, like, you know, Netflix, you know, potential investor in WWE. And if that kind of
potential bidder of
Netflix balking at being associated with WWE, basically, does that take a big player off?
I think now that comes Vince, rights? I think now that Vince is, you know, not in the foreground anymore, That probably loosens that up. The question is, you know, if you talk to Reed Hastings about his sports rights strategy, Netflix CEO, sorry. I know that they bid modestly for Formula One rights. They've always been of the mindset that we would only really get involved in sports or this type of live entertainment if we owned the asset and could control everything going in. You know, that perhaps gets you to, hey, maybe Netflix would be a bidder for WWE if it came for sale, but probably a less likely bidder for licensing rights.
Right. Warner Brothers Discovery has their earnings call on Thursday. And they're, of course, the parent company of TNT and TBS, where AEW airs. So there's the feeling that I've gotten from reading and listening into Warner Brothers Discovery is that they're practicing cost discipline, and they're cutting a lot of costs. There's obviously been a lot of management change. And that's the one negative against an argument that AEW is going to get this huge increase in TV rights fees is that, well, I don't know. I don't know how much Warner Brothers Discovery really wants to spend. But if you compare ratings between AEW and WWE, yes, AEW is below WWE, but pretty close. And there's a huge gap in the amount of money that they're being
paid. That's right.
Being paid $44 million a year.
Look, they're going to, and none of us really know exactly what the team at Warner Brothers Discovery, led by David Zaslav, is thinking in terms of their overall content strategy. We're going following their earnings. I believe they're giving some more insight into that through kind of an analyst day situation. So we'll know a little more. But what role does live and sports play in their overall strategy? Where do they plan on putting that type of content in the future? How much do they want to spend on that content? How much do they want to spend on content in general? And how much does their overall content mix need to change given the financial leverage, aka debt, that they have coming out of the merger?
And Zaslav has never really managed domestic sports before, right?
He has not. Nope.
So this is kind of unknown. Sport, like, I can't see them like letting the NBA go, but it's an unknown as far as something that's, you know, not this huge sports property and a pretty new brand. It's an unknown about how they're going to treat that, to me.
Yeah, we have no idea what Zaslav is really thinking, except for, I mean, look, we've spoken to him. Like, the Lightshed team interviewed him for Lightshed Live, so we have some, you know, a little bit of insight. But the world's also changed a lot over the past couple of months. Whether it's, you know, sort of the overall, you know, slowdown in subscriber growth across the industry for these streaming services, the way the economy's changed and the ad market itself has changed. And when you're a company that has a lot of debt that you have to pay down and interest to service, you have to be much more cognizant of all of these things than you would if you had an unlimited balance sheet like an Amazon or an Apple.
And for AEW, like, my feeling is, depending on how new creative leadership under Paul Levesque goes, and according to a report from Fightful that came out today, there's a lot of happiness among talent that Sean Ross Sapp has talked to. He said more than two dozen talents. Nobody was negative about it. And they're pretty optimistic about, for example, not wrestling the same wrestlers week after week. So I could see a lot of wrestlers who didn't want to go or wanted to leave WWE being less enticed to go into AEW. So I feel like AEW has been this strong alternative to WWE since it began in 2019, and some of its advantage might be lessened now going forward.
Yeah, that sounds like a headwind, like a real headwind for them. And it'll be interesting to kind of watch how the ratings, you know, gulf between the two evolves over the next couple of weeks as Paul really puts his imprint on WWE or it doesn't. And, you know, how the flow of talent works going forward.
And I do think that there's probably room in the space, even though there hasn't, I guess there's been Impact Wrestling, but there haven't been two really big, strong brands of wrestling in the U.S. for nearly 20 years until the last couple of years. But I think it is one of those ways in which wrestling is kind of like sports, and then also in a little bit of a way, kind of not, in that there, you don't have to have just one major football league, or you don't have to have just one major wrestling league, like you do have to have one major football league, basketball league, baseball league, and so forth. But and anything else to add here, Jesse? I think Brandon's got an earnings call coming up that we're going to get to.
I do.
Yes.
Get time to get into video game land with EA reporting.
Right. I know they released some of their, I think they released the Madden trailer, or they released some stuff today.
And there was a deal on the soccer the other football side with La Liga as the sort of FIFA relationship disintegrates into league by league relationships.
So you're going to get
there's stuff to hear about for sure.
They're going to have the you're not going to be able to play as Barcelona or Real Madrid anymore.
No, you will. You will. They're just cutting individual deals with all the leagues instead of having an overarching deal with FIFA. So the game won't be called FIFA anymore, which is crazy because FIFA has existed as long as kind of, you know, video games have existed. Yeah. Well, not obviously not, but
no, I think even I know that I played that on Super Nintendo or something.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's right.
Back to the early 90s, but they were used to. In FIFA, they used to like Juventus isn't Juventus in FIFA. It's I think it's Piemonte Calcio because Juventus, the club, has its individual deal with. I want to say it's not a Pro Evolution Soccer, which is like FIFA's competitor that's more popular in Europe. And so I wonder if they're going forward, they're going to cut certain teams, they're going to cut certain leagues out of it.
I think it's that's certainly possible. It's something to listen for tonight, I guess.
Okay. Anything you want to plug, Brandon?
No. I mean, I don't know. My Twitter account? I don't know what I would plug.
follow at Brando Lightshed for viral photos.
I thought that photo was pretty good.
Yeah, that was a great photo. Yeah. All righty. Well, we'll let you get to EA Sports, Electronic Arts. Thanks, Brandon, so much for joining us. And
it was a lot of fun. Thanks for having me. Hopefully we do it again sometime. Maybe I'll have you guys on Lightshed Live next. We'll see how it goes.
We'll do it. We'll
have to talk about it. All right. Take care, guys.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Brandon.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.